This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
We are hearing from health systems all across the country that they've been able to accelerate change and adopt new practices faster than they ever have before in very positive ways. And changes that they had wanted to make that they thought would take 3, 5, even 10 years, they're tackling now due to the crisis at hand.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Trevor Durin. And on this episode, we'll discuss all the ways that the coronavirus and COVID-19 are affecting our forecast for future healthcare demand. With me are two of our senior-most thought leaders at SG2 who oversee the annual development of our industry-leading and really the most fun thing, the thing we get most excited about doing, which is our impact of change forecast, and that's Dr. Maddie McDowell and Lisa Slama. Now, Maddie and Lisa just did a webinar for the release of this brand new forecast, which walked through the data and the numbers, and we'll link in the show notes. Today's conversation is going to be more about the high-level trends and the drivers behind the numbers, but I want you to know that, of course, there's more detail and all the quantifiable stuff available on SG2.com. So first, Maddie, can you give a high-level overview here of how we're forecasting short and long-term changes in demand based on COVID? Because our normal annual refresh timing meant that we had the forecast kind of packed and on the truck and ready to roll at the beginning of March. When I say we, I really mean you guys led this incredible effort to redo it based on COVID. So give us some of the high-level trends.
So there is a lot happening right now in the short term in terms of COVID-19 and dynamic changes in utilization. We saw literally a shutdown of elective surgery in March and April, and then a gradual phasing in or reopening recovery of that. And that has led to a lot of significant changes in utilization. But our forecast captures annual changes year over year over the decade. And as we looked at this, we realized that not only were the dynamic changes happening in 2020, but there were impacts from COVID-19 that were likely to cause care transformation and long-term enduring changes over 10 years. And our forecast really captures both the mid and long-term changes that are happening in terms of COVID-19. Essentially, if you look at a high level, the forecast does show an overall dip in many services for 2020 and in many cases, part of 2021, and then a recovery. We'll get into the details of how that looks because there's a lot of underneath the surface that's really important to understand in terms of care transformation due to COVID-19. The other thing to mention is that while this is happening at a national level, this trend in dip and recovery, it will play out very differently market to market, depending on a couple of things. One, the epidemiology, the COVID-19 outbreak itself, how hard it hits a market and the timing of that and whether there's a second wave will really impact utilization in the next couple of years, as well as the economic downturn and impact of COVID-19 on shutting down the economy. That will have different impacts across the country. Some areas will be hit harder. And so as you look at our forecast, know that we do have a hyper-localized version of this to get a more accurate picture at the market level.
That's perfect. Thanks. So Maddie, across really the national economy, we're seeing businesses are physically either ready to reopen or have already reopened, but consumer confidence is appropriately, I think, still really uncertain about their individual and public safety. And the same is true for health systems. How long will it take to rebuild that confidence and how are we incorporating that in our forecast?
So as we reopen, there are really two dimensions to the consumer reticence to coming back. The first is concerns around safety, and there will be certain populations that will be more concerned than others, particularly the medically vulnerable and the elderly from our surveys. Having said that, hospitals and health systems are doing a lot in order to ensure safety and reaching out to their communities to explain their safety measures, whether that be testing every patient prior to surgery, eliminating waiting rooms. A lot is being done to help with infection control and prevent the spread of COVID-19 within the health system itself. But that will come back more slowly, and certain markets may see that that comes back slower than others. For example, New York City, which was hit very hard by COVID-19, the consumer reticence is greater there than in a market where there has not been as much of a COVID-19 outbreak. But in addition to that, there's also the financial concerns. Many people have lost their jobs. They may not have insurance now. And if they do have insurance, even paying the deductible is something that they are thinking twice about, as the future of the economy is less certain and people are more concerned about spending in general. So it is really those two things combined that will slow down the recovery for the healthcare system in terms of fully reopening. And we'll see also if there is a second wave of COVID-19, that will significantly impair a hospital's ability to get back to baseline volumes.
And when we really thought about kind of this dip in utilization that we would see on the inpatient side and on the outpatient side that really is zeroed in on weakened consumer confidence, we really thought about how different services would see a different magnitude of decline. So we really grouped all of our different conditions, our services throughout our forecast, and started to think about them in terms of the magnitude of the decline and how that would recover. So just as Maddie mentioned, there's regional differences. We know that certain services will bounce back very quickly. If you kind of think about some of the high acuity visits in the emergency department, and others will take a longer time to recover and the dip will be more severe. These are more of our elective or services that could be reduced on some level.
So Maddie mentioned this a bit, but coverage erosion was a trend we were talking about last year, a different kind of coverage erosion, and now it's rapidly accelerated. Lisa, how might that impact our forecast for healthcare utilization? And quick shameless plug here, I'm part of a small team that's working on a tool to forecast payer mix shifts at the county level, because we know it's going to be localized like so much of our forecast, and that's coming soon. So Lisa, how are we expecting it to impact utilization over the next near term and long term?
I'm sure that tool will be very popular as we talk to clients. That's becoming a really important question is how will we see payer mix change as a result of COVID. We know the unemployment rate is going up. We know that oftentimes leads to shifts from folks coming off commercial insurance to Medicaid or uninsured altogether. And this changes utilization. And so we really started to model, especially over the next few years, as we see furloughs and other programs like COBRA tend to kind of push this out, we're going to see changes in utilization. And there's really two parts to this. The first part is the dip in utilization that oftentimes is the result of coverage erosion. And then the other side, the flip side, is equally important, and that tends to be the increase in care as a consequence of some of the services that get delayed or avoided altogether due to being under or uninsured.
Yeah. And for a good example of that would be services for example, low back pain. Patients defer that. They decide not to go in to see their doctor, not get the MRI, and hold off on getting physical therapy because they don't have insurance. So they just live with their back pain. But another example of an increase in utilization is in behavioral health. So patients that are uninsured that do not get their usual care, perhaps don't get their psychiatric medicines because they're uninsured, end up in a crisis and end up in the emergency department to be able to get care. And so we see these pushes and pulls when the uninsured rate goes up and have factored that into the forecast, with certain services seeing an increase and others seeing a decline. And as Lisa mentioned, this is really based on our historic data, that we have really good data to show how the uninsured use healthcare differently. And so are reflecting that in our forecast.
Somewhat similarly, we've been talking about site of care shifts since I was an SG2 client 10 years ago. There must be site of care shifts getting accelerated now. And Maddie, I know there's a lot to talk about here.
When we think about the long-term impacts of COVID-19, it's really less about the utilization volume changes, declines, or growth. It's much more fundamentally about site of care shifts. Where care will be delivered in the future has direct impacts due to COVID-19 itself. COVID-19 has been a crisis in our healthcare system that really shut down our hospitals' ability to provide care as usual. And what happened because of that was a lot of experimentation in caring for patients in new sites of care. Some of these sites of care, or most of these site of care shifts, were things we had already forecasted. For example, probably the best illustration is virtual visits. So telemedicine visits with your doctor was something that was beginning to happen across the country, and we were forecasting. During COVID-19, though, we saw an accelerated adoption of that. Health systems talked about doing under 100 telemedicine visits a month prior to COVID, and during COVID, reaching 7,000 to 10,000 visits a week in their health system.
Wow.
And with that accelerated adoption came a comfort level and a better understanding of what services you could deliver virtually and safely. Patients also preferred this for many conditions and felt more comfortable with it. And so we expect to see the enduring changes in terms of shift to telemedicine continue after our COVID-19 outbreak and we have a vaccine and life goes back to normal. Telemedicine will continue to be widely used because of the widespread adoption during COVID-19. So that's a great example. Another example is new sites of care. So the drive-by clinic that was used for COVID-19 testing, you know, light bulbs went off in health systems saying, maybe we could use this for other things. One health system talked about doing their Coumadin clinics, which require frequent lab tests from patients who are on Coumadin, doing that as a drive-by clinic. And they hope that after COVID-19, they'll be able to preserve this type of service to their patients. Think how much more convenient it is to do that for other services like pharmacy and coffee and others. So the new drive-by clinic could be something that is enduring. Another big area that we saw site of care shifts was in post-acute. Patients that were being discharged from the hospital were going directly to the home. These were patients that would have gone to a skilled nursing facility, but due to COVID-19 concerns, either the patient having COVID-19 and their concern about infectious spread, or they're medically fragile and they're worried about putting them into a skilled nursing facility where they could perhaps get COVID-19. Due to the outbreaks happening across the country, they were directly sent to home, and remote monitoring and intensive home nursing visits were used to help care for those patients. We are getting more and more questions about home therapy from our clients, and we are seeing more creative use of remote monitoring to manage patients in the home. And again, this is something that we expect to see accelerate the shift to home site of care, even post COVID-19. And finally, another big shift is the surgical shift to outpatient surgery from the inpatient setting, both to hospital outpatient surgery centers and ambulatory surgery centers. With COVID-19 still in the hospitals and the risk of patients coming into the hospital for an overnight stay for surgery, patients are more and more inclined to have their surgery done in an outpatient center. Providers are more inclined to do it in an outpatient center. And so we've seen a shift to outpatient surgery that is accelerated. And the example I'd like to give is joint replacement. This is one that was shifting to the outpatient. We had forecasted that happening, but due to COVID-19, that shift has only been accelerated. And so a significant decline in inpatient joint replacement happening during COVID-19, and more comfort, practice, and experience in doing this surgery in the outpatient setting. So those are some of the shifts that are happening that are very pronounced across our system of care that are enduring. And there are others too. Lisa, do you have any to mention?
So another big shift, right, has been kind of that shift in the emergency department. And it's been really interesting to look at this area of service in this time of COVID. Now, SG2 had predicted the exodus of a lot of these lower acuity visits from the emergency department long before COVID hit. This would be due to folks, you know, having access to urgent care centers, maybe physician offices that were expanded or extended. And of course, just the high copay oftentimes associated with emergency department visits. So we had anticipated this shift. We had seen it historically, and we knew there was a little bit more juice to squeeze in terms of some of these visits leaving the ED. This was going to kind of trickle over the decade. And really what we see is COVID accelerating this shift as well. In kind of the last couple of months, we've seen a huge drop in emergency department visits, both in terms of these low acuity visits and actually the high acuity visits too, unfortunately. We think those high acuity visits will return, right? They belong in the emergency department. They will certainly return. It's this low acuity visits that we really don't expect to see return at the same magnitude that they were in terms of 2019 levels. Essentially, we're hitting the floor in terms of getting those visits out earlier in the decade as opposed to over the next 10 years.
Now, Maddie, we haven't really touched on yet if COVID caused the disease burden to increase for any specific conditions, how that might be impacting the forecast.
So we have built in some long-term epidemiologic considerations in the forecast due to COVID-19 itself. COVID-19 has, in some cases, caused long-term chronic disease problems such as renal disease, renal failure, and pulmonary disease. And because of that, there will be an increased demand for services, both outpatient and to a lesser degree, inpatient, for these conditions. So that is built into our forecast. And we know health systems and hospitals are already, especially in markets that have been hit hard, are already having to prepare for increased dialysis, for example, and expand their service offerings for that. So this is something that will impact your healthcare utilization long term, and it will be impacted at a different magnitude depending on how hard your market was hit in terms of the COVID-19 outbreak.
Thanks. That might have been a little disjointed, but because we were talking about sites and all, but I felt like that was a specific thing to go back and address. So thanks for doing that. So what about services that instead of shifting sites, simply slow down? Are we seeing a utilization decline? And Lisa, we already outlined this at a high level. And we already talked about some specific site shifts, but give us some parting thoughts here.
That's an interesting one too. So you know, we've talked for years about the high cost of healthcare in the US. We have to bend that cost curve. Part of the way of doing that is getting rid of those unnecessary or redundant services and thinking of new ways and new care patterns to treat patients with just as good outcomes, if not better, but potentially less services, and in a way that really optimizes patient safety. And I think COVID has become a really great way to really push this idea forward, really emphasizing where do we need to see patients, what do they need, and in that will come some examples of where we can pull out some service utilization and keep patients at the forefront in terms of outcomes and safety.
And one great example is radiation therapy. This is one where there was a lot of outcomes data to suggest that United States was doing, there was a lot of overutilization in terms of the number of fractions or sessions of radiation therapy given to a cancer patient. And this notion of hypofractionation, doing fewer sessions, fewer fractions, was something that was being done across the globe internationally and beginning to be adopted in our country. And in fact, CMS was trying to encourage this through a mandatory bundle that was going to happen in terms of you get one payment for radiation therapy and that would incentivize using less fractions. And that really quickly was adopted during COVID-19 since oncologists did not want to bring their patients back to the health system. They began to use more judicious schedules for radiation therapy. And so we saw a very rapid uptake of this notion of hypofractionation and a reduction in radiation therapy sessions. There are other examples across service lines of this happening. And we're only beginning to get outcomes data from this to see when, in fact, this is a better use of healthcare services. But for example, we're likely to see fewer diagnostic tests, perhaps in cardiology over time, less frequent testing, and perhaps echoes and EKGs as we begin to better understand the overutilization and feel more comfortable in this health system, decreasing the number of diagnostics that we do. So while we have built this into the forecast for things that we know about, there are some care pathway changes that will happen in the future that are being developed today and that we're tracking and following over the next couple of years as we begin this experimental phase in COVID-19, where we will likely add new forecasts over time as we see care pathways change.
And Maddie, this is really the silver lining, wouldn't you say, in terms of COVID? I mean, there's been so much decimation in terms of utilization. But it's things like this, this kind of acceleration of stuff that we should be doing already, this acceleration of innovative care paths and care models that will really hopefully help define healthcare over the decade.
We are hearing from health systems all across the country that they've been able to accelerate change and adopt new practices faster than they ever have before in very positive ways. And changes that they had wanted to make that they thought would take 3, 5, even 10 years, they're tackling now due to the crisis at hand. And so being able to do that, they're hoping that there's some long-term lessons learned about how to be able to adapt and change more quickly, even after this pandemic.
That's really well said. I can't think of a better closing comment. So Maddie and Lisa, I don't know how you did it, but after spending months really rolling up your sleeves in the data and quantifying the impacts, you managed to do an incredible job talking through the trends at a high level. So I thank you. And I think our listener, thank you. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. As always, please subscribe or follow if you want to hear more. And I also always like to recommend another Vizient podcast, The Modern Practice. It's on Vizient's medical leadership channel and provides a clinical perspective into a lot of the current issues affecting healthcare today. Thanks for tuning in and see everyone again soon.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.